Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Everybody's safe. You know, we have a few people banged up a little bit, a few cuts, a few bruises. But other than that, everybody's healthy, and it could have been much worse. The way the flight attendants, the pilots, everybody, the student athletes, the students, the staff conduct themselves, it was incredible. We were off that plane, going down those chutes, going up on the wings, getting out of there. In a minute, it seemed like everybody got off that plane. Everybody was really disciplined and a lot of poise.
Walker inside, backs it out to Wolf. With a 3-1 answer from a senior from Michigan. Walton again. When they need a big bucket, he has delivered today.
And the performance of his that we really can't put on screen is the leadership role that he's taken, especially going through everything that this team has gone through. John Beilein certainly doing his job, but Derek Walton, as you see.
The flip from Abdul-Rahman, and maybe the exclamation point for Michigan, and the dunk from Zach Urban. But I would imagine there's not been a 24 hours like this in the career of John Beilein, whose leadership was tested in a lot of ways. Not only his leadership of this team, but of the entire university and everybody around it over the last 24 hours.
I believe so much in the team chemistry and having a team that is just so so connected that they can do anything. They love each other, and that was another time that we really got to love each other. Not only that, but the whole day of getting in here and everything, they just came out. They needed this. They needed to just go out and play basketball.
I'm not taking anything away from Rutgers, but we weren't sharp, focused. I mean, 19 offensive rebounds, a joke. You know, we just never manned up to the level we needed to.
We all kind of need to look in the mirror and ask ourselves if we actually care about this program, this university, the fans, and each other, me included. I feel like at times we don't play with the heart and passion like we should.
What were the breakdowns for you?
All over the place. They destroyed us. It wasn't just one place or one area. They absolutely destroyed us. We made some shots. We got up one, and then they just killed us after that. So I'm not putting anything into that. So what? We played 4 good minutes in the game. That's great.
We just didn't move the ball. They're very good ones, which the majority of the league is, but they're very good. Difficult for us offensively because we didn't really defensively rebound the ball, nor did we get a lot of stops.
Tyrod Taylor led the Bills to the 7th rated offense last year. Where are you going to get a quarterback that comes in that's going to get that type of production? Number two, I think he looked out there, and I think that the Browns had some interest, the Jets had some interest, but I don't know that he fully trusted that anybody was going to jump in. So if he's uncertain and the Bills are uncertain, then it makes sense for both sides to jump in and get it done.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All righty then, onward and upward are we on a Thursday afternoon. It's 11 minutes after 3 o'clock. This is the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, where we are and will remain Toledo's sports leader. My goodness gracious. How about that? Practice jerseys all around. Now, this is the question. Hey, Cushlin, are you superstitious?
Sometimes.
You know how athletes are.
Yes, they are.
If a pitcher has a great game, a complete game, wearing certain socks, those things will be crusty, and he won't peel them off, he won't chisel them off, until suddenly something goes bad. If something goes well, you know, they're creatures of habit a lot of times. So the Wolverines have to play Illinois in their practice gear, because at least their jerseys, because they did not make the trip to the Big Ten tournament in D.C. And how about it? A 20-point win. You know what? I promise you they're going to think about it for the next time.
They certainly, for anybody who saw parts of that game, because, yeah, it's that day where there's a whole bunch, and they got the early slot to boot on everything that, of course, happened with their little plane fiasco yesterday as a result of those wins all around the area that we were talking about yesterday. And honestly, I was watching a lot of that game this afternoon leading up the show, and I haven't watched a ton of Michigan basketball over the course of the year, but I've watched just enough off and on that's as loose as I've ever seen them. It is weird. You know, sometimes funky things happen that just mess up all your routines, all your rhythms. And as Coach Beilein said, among other things in that montage, they just went out and played basketball.
Yeah, I mean, and you would think that would mess them up. There's no doubt about it, but that's exactly what they did. They went out and played very comfortably. It's an 8-9 matchup, and they win by 20, and now they set up a showdown with number one seed, Purdue, in the next round, and I wonder if they what they'll leave behind this time. Maybe it won't make it as obvious. Maybe they'll leave behind, I don't know, their jocks or something, and they'll have to wear replacement jocks. I'm literally trying to think of something, you know, because of the superstitious nature of sometimes how athletes are. So that's kind of a neat story there. As championship week, that would be championship week, not championship. Championship week rolls along. The Buckeyes are no longer part of it, of course. Yesterday, Ohio State dropped their Big Ten tournament opener against Rutgers, the final and 14th seed in the tournament. How disappointing is that as far as an end? Because there's not even a shot really at the NIT now, I don't think, for the Buckeyes. How disappointing an end to the season is that for Ohio State, Chris?
Especially if that turns out to be that the case, the last thing you said.
I mean, do you think they'll get in having been bounced by the 14th
the
seed
way
in their
the
own
NIT
tournament?
Usually works, you'll get your auto bids, and there's already like six of those from those small one-bid leagues, and I got something to say. I got a bone to pick with all this, by the by, that's kind of relevant for either today or tomorrow,
well,
really, because
away.
Of conference tournaments. But to answer your question first, for the Buckeyes, I do think they'll still squeak in, but they might not even get a home game anymore, so they might be even one and done there in an almost what's the point kind of thing. So it'd be very interesting that you can turn down those things. You don't have to go just because they, you know, throw it your way. So we'll see how that happens. I do still think they'll actually get in. But, you know, I got
when's the last time a team from a Power 5 conference turned down a bid to the NIT? Do you know?
No.
Because it doesn't happen often. You're right. You don't have to accept it, but it's almost expected that you do just out of sportsmanship or whatever. You know, an opportunity to give your seniors one last game or two or three if you can actually do something, you know, in the NIT.
Especially since they have their own selection show. I believe that's like 9 or 9:30 on Sunday night after they've released the big brackets. Then there's literally a half-hour show on one of the ESPNs because I watched it last year out of sheer morbid curiosity.
Yeah.
And because the Buckeyes were also going to be, I knew, in the NIT. I'm just curious where they'd be for scheduling purposes more than anything.
I just did a quick search while you chatted and said which last team to turn down NIT bid, and I got nothing.
Okay.
I got nothing. I mean, as far as current, February 16th, so a month ago, IU would accept NIT bid, according to the Indianapolis Star. I got a story that says, a result that says what teams have turned down NIT bids, but it's from 2009.
Okay.
So that's 8 years old. I'm going to try to do it maybe during our commercial break or something like that. I'd like to find out the last time that happened. I'm just kind of curious how Buckeye fans feel.
Would
you want
good?
If you're a fan of Ohio State basketball, do you want to turn or do you want to accept the bid in the NIT, especially if you don't even get a home game? Because, you know, with this kind of an end of the season, quite frankly, it's not a guarantee that you will. Or is it just kind of, hey, you know what? That's beneath us. That's where other guys go. That's not what we do. We're going to accept our bad season with dignity and with grace, and we're going to get better for next year.
I think they will probably accept it if it's offered to them. Again, I'd like to see what happens with that. I think the more interesting question, regardless of what happens to the NIT, because I think losing to a Rutgers means if you're still making the NIT, you might not even get a home game, so you might literally be done in that one game. So that game,
which is why, which begs the question, you know, when you even called it a what's the point kind of a game, and I agree with that. And if that is the mentality, you know, do you really want to do this?
Right.
I
get that. And that's why, regardless of that possible game or not, I think the most important factor is what happens to Thad Matta, in a way. I think he'll stay. But
didn't the AD say literally before the Rutgers lost that Thad Matta is safe and they're going to continue to build?
But those are always bad ominous signs, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They are. But you know what? I mean, it's a pretty doggone timely thing here. I mean, literally said it going into the tournament, and that means he knows full well they could get bounced in a game. And I cannot see them just saying, okay, we said it, but now we're not. I mean, those kinds of things usually don't happen like that. It'll be that proverbial public show of support or whatever you want to call it, that'll be like, you know, two-thirds of the way through a rough season. And then after another month of losing, then they're saying, okay, we changed our minds. We're going to boot him. Not one game before the final game of the season.
Right.
I just don't think that. I really believe he'll... I really believe that he'll be fine.
And I kind of do, I think, right now as well. I'm just saying, you know, it's out there, and then you go out and lose to Rutgers, you know, almost within 24 hours of that. It's just one of those things. But, you know, all of this is circling around in the fact that we're in, as you pointed out, the championship week, or maybe championship week is actually more appropriate. Because I got a bone to pick with some of this. And part of it is because I came to a kind of epiphany yesterday. So, long story short, at the Buckeye game, which
where
we had here
that,
on 106.
By the way, where is that? Is that near Sylvania? Where's Epiphany?
Point is, so I'm in my car, and I knew based on, you know, because I put the schedules together among other things. Buckeyes, which of course we had last night here on the ticket. We had that game, regrettably, I guess. And on our sister station, Talk Radio 100.7, our good friends at Westwood One, we had one of those championship games, right? And I happened to be the 7 o'clock hour. They hadn't tipped the games, but I'm, you know, flipping while I'm driving between the two. And I, in succession, basically, and I want to play this for you, and it's about a minute long, and it's an interesting dynamic. The first part you'll hear is Paul Keels and Ron Stokes of Ohio State IMG Sports Network. Of course, we're an affiliate of here on the ticket. The other one involves, and I forget his other name, but Jim Jackson was there among the Westwood One crew at the Patriot League Championship. And I just want you to listen to this exchange, because it's one of the giant problems right now, I think, in college basketball with these little conference tournaments that they're in. Just give this a listen.
We mentioned while broadcasting the overtime of the Penn State-Nebraska game, the attendance was really pretty poor. It's marginally better at the start of this game. Thanks to crack research from Skip Mossick, we learned that on the secondary ticket market, tickets in the lower bowl here, the lower bowl, were going for $6 for tomorrow's games. Now, Maryland is not playing tomorrow, so that probably has a big to do with it. But
$6.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
And in the Patriot League, there is no central site for the tournament, so Bucknell, as the top seed, is at home. Intimate environment. This will be a rowdy gym for sure. 4,000 the capacity. Jim, we've already heard the dueling chants just before tip-off. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Well, this is what college basketball, the intimate feel, is all about, because it's not like it's overwhelming with 20,000 seats. It's 4,000 to 5,000 seats. The students are involved.
And you notice the stark difference in what they're laying out there?
A little bit, yeah.
You know, something has to be done about these conference tournaments. Not just the fact that nobody goes to them, even though sadly somehow money's involved. I promise you it's not for ticket sales.
No.
It's for TV and
rights.
Other such things. Sure. We also know the part, because this comes up and has at least 10 plus times every single year for the last 6 years in those littler conferences, like the Patriot League clip, part of that. You know, teams that only one team's gone. And 10 plus auto bids have been going out to the NIT in the last 6 years. That means a regular season champ in one of those leagues blew it and gets stuck in the not important tournament. So something has to be done about the fact that nobody really likes these. Nobody goes to them. And kind of, unless you're a power conference, where really it only matters to a handful of teams, and those are the ones on the bubble. You know, like Michigan State playing right now. You don't want to lose to Penn State and have 14 losses. The committee's going to hate that. But you get one more chance to, you know, bump that up and get another quality opponent because you're a big conference. But it does nothing but screw over, basically.
So I'm not sure what you're saying, though. Are you saying get rid of all the conference tournaments? Or are you talking about location issues?
Now, that's the ideal world, is to go back to once the way it once was, because now everybody has conference tournaments. In case you hadn't caught this, you know, they even got the Ivy League to cry uncle, right? Even they have one now. So everybody
does. And it's the tournament champion that goes into the tournament.
Right.
Which is the biggest problem that I have with this entire thing.
Bingo. Now, of course, we want the world where maybe it should go back. I mean, the Big Ten tournament isn't that old. You and I, Bob, we grew up, there was no such thing.
Oh, of course.
Right? There was only a handful.
They were late to the party.
Exactly. There were only a handful of them, even in the big conferences, and those were mostly like the ACC and the Big East, and those are actually kind of okay, actually.
Big Ten used to stand for tradition.
Yes.
And, you know, they also didn't used to have a conference championship football game either, you know, with their two divisions.
Sure.
They were one of the last big power conferences to do that as well. So they were always about tradition, but eventually money wins out over tradition.
And that's why, though I'd like a scenario where they all are just gone, Because that way, you know, the small conferences can put their so-called best foot forward, if you will. And there's really no point whatsoever to the big conferences, the power conferences, because they're going to send multiple bids anyway. It's only important, again, for maybe a bubble team who needs to avoid a last bad loss or help their resume one more time before Selection Sunday so they're on the good side of the bubble, right? Yeah. But we also, sadly, I think, live in a world. I mean, if the Ivy League is also crying uncle along with everybody else, then regrettably, in the real world, we sadly have to admit that these things aren't going anywhere.
So you're saying that in a perfect world, you would get rid of the tournaments altogether?
Of course.
But so since that's not going to happen, we need to talk about two other things.
And
in my opinion.
Okay.
One of which is the location, because as Paul Keels is talking about, nobody's coming here. They're selling $6 tickets
to the lower bowl. That's hilarious, isn't it?
What's that?
That's so hilarious on a couple of levels.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't high school games more than that? Don't high school tournament games charge $7 for adults and like $5 for kids?
I could double check that, but we're basically at the same level.
I think it's like $7 for a high school tournament game in the state of Ohio.
Bill Clark, maybe later on today, will be able to let us know on that, actually.
And like $5, yeah, but he never pays. He's got Mr. Credential. But I think it's $7 and it's like $5 for students, right? So they're selling tickets for $6. And the main reason is the Big Ten means nothing to the people in D.C. Oh, other than, as Paul pointed out, when Maryland plays, you're going to have some people there. But nobody is going to be going to this game, and people aren't even traveling from the schools to follow their teams down to play in D.C. And next year they're going to Madison Square Garden. It's going to be more of the same. Why are they going to be there? Because Rutgers is there from Jersey, which is just ridiculous. If it's in Indianapolis, if it's in, I don't know, Champaign, some place that's relatively central to most of the Big Ten schools, and we talked about this with Paul, I think, last week. I think it was Paul Keels, and he pointed out that you're within driving distance of almost every school outside of Rutgers, Maryland, and probably Penn State. You know, because that's quite a haul from
Wisconsin or Minnesota or something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you're pretty close, and you're going to get a much bigger crowd there, and you're going to have much more of an exciting tournament. Now, that's part A, is the location part. Part B, and this is the thing that I have, if you want to have this tournament to allow the committee to say, well, look at that, you know, a team that was, you know, 17-14 and, I don't know, 9-4, or that's actually not too bad. Let's say 8-7 or whatever the case might be in their conference, rose up, got hot, upset two of the top four seeds and won the tournament. It should be a factor for the committee to consider as to whether or not they belong in the NCAA tournament instead of what they have, which is the tournament champion is the automatic bid winner to that to the NCAA tournament, which essentially negates 3.5 months of regular season basketball. And that's the biggest problem that I have with all of these tournaments during championship week. Now, I know why they do it, because it's the only way you get those television dollars if something is riding on it. If this is the automatic bid, especially if you're in a one-bid league, if you're in the MAC, if you're in the Horizon League, if you're in any of those smaller or mid-sized one-bid leagues, they want the tournament to mean something so they can command top dollar for those tournament games on television.
Yep.
But the fact of the matter is, what that is saying is that, you know, a 27-2 regular season tournament, a regular season champion, somebody who went, you know, 11-1 in their conference.
Okay.
But somehow just has a cold shooting night and loses in the quarterfinals.
Okay.
Or in the semifinals of the conference tournament. That 3.5 months of excellence is undone. You don't get a bid into the NCAAs because the 17-14 team got hot and won three games in a row and won their conference tournament.
And you could argue there are 24 of the 32 such conferences that will fall into the boat you're describing.
Into the one-bid league, you mean?
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point.
Sadly, the MAC is in that, folks. Sorry.
That's right. And how many times have we said, you know, when we've seen the best team in the regular season not win the conference tournament, say, come on, they got to have a second bid. They got to let this the team that won the regular season conference, standings champion,
championship.
Well, I've noticed there's almost always
and
one
it never happens.
From the MAC in the NIT, so that pretty much answers your question right there.
That's my point, and that's what's wrong with college basketball, in my estimation. As wonderful as quote-unquote March Madness is, as wonderful as Championship Week is, that's the flaw. You have essentially said you don't have to be great for 3.5 months. You got to be great for 4 days, 5 days max, to win three games. And then no matter what you did, you know, we saw what happened in the Horizon with Milwaukee going all the way to the championship game.
It's a brilliant example. They were, what, 10 and 20?
11, I think, 11 wins?
Yeah, if they won, they would have had the most losses ever as a tournament team at, I believe, 24.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, and 11 victories. And they would be the automatic bid to the NCAAs from the Horizon. And a Horizon team with 22, 23 wins that got upset in that tournament would not be going. And to which, of course, you are essentially, you know, how, remember how the BCS used to have their stupid mantra that, you know, every game counts.
Yes.
This is why they were against the playoffs, because the regular season is the playoffs. Every game counts.
Still use that argument to not go to eight, but of course, continue.
It's the exact opposite of what they're doing in college basketball with championship week tournaments. They're saying that none of the games count. Everybody qualifies for the postseason tournament, as they do in high school basketball. You could be 0-22 in high school basketball, and you're still in a sectional first-round game, and you can advance. Everybody gets to go.
Yep.
And when everybody gets to go, yes, a team that has 0-1-2, or in Milwaukee's case, 11 wins, has a chance to go to the tournament. And so they're saying that none of the games count. None of the regular season games matter. And I would far rather see a team that was great for 3.5 months, who had one bad outing in a tournament game,
completely
go
agree.
To the show, than to have a team that sucked for 3.5 months and got hot for a week in the tournament, and suddenly now they're in the dance.
Yeah,
that's
you're,
what I got.
And I'm glad you point out the Horizon League, because if you're the Horizon League, you'd never say it out loud, of course, but you hate the way your tournament just went down this year. You hate it because it's going to lower your one bid's seed. Probably, I don't even think Northern Kentucky, who's going to the dance for the first time as a result of that chaos. I doubt that they may. If you want to get weird with your bracket, go ahead. But I bet they're like a 15 or something. And I don't know if they're that Florida Gulf Coast kind of 15. So that hurts the conference. But again, the sad reality to me is two things. These conference tournaments aren't going anywhere.
Yep.
And there's, as a result, they're still going to carry the auto bid. Even if whether a conference has one bid, or maybe in the case of the ACC this year, 9 or 10.
Well, see, and the thing is, the auto bid, again, and this is how I fix it, the auto bid is to the regular season champion of the conference. That's the auto bid, and you can earn a second bid.
I agree with this type solution, yes.
If you win the tournament championship based on what you did in the regular season and how the committee evaluates it.
Right.
And so if you're going to be, again, a one bid league, now we know the problem, of course, is that, again, the tournament, which is already drawing $6 a ticket, as he's talking about, Paul's talking about down in D.C., will draw even less, and it'll draw
that's the Big
networks.
Ten in New York City. There's one small conference that barely had anybody in the gym. It was the Metro Atlantic, which we had coverage of here in the ticket from Westwood One, our friends, by the way, on Monday, and that's in Albany, New York. I mean, who's going to go to Albany to see Iona and Siena? The answer, nobody outside of those two.
Nobody from Iona, and nobody from Siena
is
even going to go, except for Siena's kind of close, I think. But
Bob, this is why, if you're going to have these tournaments and also have them decide the auto bid, what you do is, and even though I agree, you said earlier, you know, for Big Ten, have it in Champaign, have it in Chicago or Indy or whatever, have it in the region. Makes total sense. I'm taking it a step further. No more of this neutral site nonsense. No more. That's what the Patriot League, the other part of my clip from earlier that helped me get to this epiphany. If you're going to do it at all.
Where'd you say that was again?
It's around here somewhere. And you got to do it in a home road fashion.
I think it's in Michigan.
And to do that, not everybody from your tournament's going to make it. The big boys can expand it to 8 or 10, go to a quarterfinal, and really no further, because, again, the only purpose it serves to the big conferences has nothing to do with the auto bid. It's irrelevant at that point. It's the bubble teams, like a Michigan State, who's playing right now and doing well, so they're not going to fall off the bubble, it looks like, the way this first half is going. They're up 45-27 on Penn State, but a loss there could knock them off the bubble. But that's the only one in big conferences that matter. For the little guys, the whole point is, well, it might screw them over, and it does, a lot. So what you do is maybe for the power guys have a quarterfinal, and this is all home road based on your seed. You're the regular season champ. That means you're playing it at your actual building. None of this neutral site stuff. For the mid-majors, and I looked up some standings for various mid-major and small one-bid leagues for this season, you could get away with just having five. And by having five, yeah, you give that regular season champion a bye all the way to its conference's title game, which will be in their gym. Everybody else is playing a round or two for the right to play that top seed in their building.
Very interesting ideas. Very interesting. All right, we need to get a timeout here for SportsCenter. When we come back, we're going to talk about that mammoth free agent signing that the Cleveland Browns have made. They have really solidified their passing attack by signing star wide receiver. I'll let Jim Cushlin tell you about that during the SportsCenter coming up. And then we're going to talk a little high school basketball as the tournament marches on for the boys. And Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio and Southeast Michigan, will join us right here on ESPN 106.5.
Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
All righty then. Welcome as we continue on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk to Mr. Bill Clark about a little high school basketball as we get closer and closer to district and regional basketball, of course, in the Final Four, looking towards state championships. But before we do all of that, today is a big day. We were talking a lot about the tournament in the first half hour.
Bob, my head hurts, though. This is a big day. I know where you're going with this. Please continue.
No, you don't. Be quiet. I've got something to say here. Now, I want people to listen to this very, very carefully. All right? I'm going to say four things, and then I want you to tell me which of these is not like the other. Which of these things just doesn't belong. Okay? Are you ready for this? All right. Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, AJ Green, actually I'll make it five things, Dez Bryant, and Kenny Britt. Those are the five things I want you to consider. Now,
is not like the others. One of these things doesn't belong. Can you tell which thing is not like the other by the time I finish this song?
Everybody! Who knows which of these things is not like the other? Jim Cushlin, which of these things just doesn't belong? Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, AJ Green, Dez Bryant, Kenny Britt. Tell me which of these things is not like the other. Jimmy, we call on you.
Well, one of those is not actually a number one wide receiver.
Okay, a wide receiver or a wide receiver?
Wide receiver.
Okay, just checking on that. It's okay, though, Jimmy. Everybody has speech.
No, I'm sorry. I'm going to get to this in a second when we get through this, because this is on the same track. And let's just say, Bob, my head hurts, but continue. No, I'm not kidding. Yours will, too, in a minute.
Not only are they not all number one receivers, the most important thing here is one of them is a multimillionaire who doesn't... One of them is a multimillionaire who is stealing money from an NFL franchise. And the one that is stealing money from the NFL franchise is indeed Kenny Britt, who is now going to be stealing $32 million from a franchise that has a baseball man with a computer making football decisions for the football franchise. The Cleveland Browns have agreed to pay, and they can't do this officially until 4 o'clock. I wonder if somebody could, like, send a virus to DePodesta's computer between now and then
so that the analytics are all jacked up,
and he can say, hey, maybe this isn't such a good idea. $32.5 million, $17 million guaranteed, $8.1 million a year, which is a little bit more than the $8 million or so the Browns had offered Terrell Pryor to stay in Cleveland. Kenny Britt, an 8-year veteran who has never been anything more than a third-tier wide receiver, including this past season with the Rams, in which he caught 68 passes for 1,002 yards and 5 touchdowns. A first-round pick in 2009 who has never achieved anything other than third-tier status is now averaging $8.1 million a year from the Cleveland Browns.
And based on what I'm looking at right now, Bob, he's just a little mugger on the street, honestly. No, I'm serious. Compared to the real bank robber. Adam Schefter, 7 minutes ago.
Yes?
And I quote, stunner. Texans trade Brock Osweiler and 2018 second-round pick to Cleveland.
No, that didn't just happen.
I'm looking at the tweet right now. This is why my head hurts. Go look at. I'm looking at
his tweet.
I got
it, too. I just got the news alert. Literally, Jim, as you spoke, I got a news alert come across my phone. Report. Cleveland Browns trade for Brock Osweiler. Oh, my God. Brock Osweiler, is that the same cat who just stole money from the Houston Texans?
Why do you think I just said Kenny Britt's now just a street mugger, as righteous as everything you said? He's just a street mugger. We're talking about the bank robber now.
He's kind of the poster child for bad contracts.
Please be fake news.
He's kind of the poster child for bad contracts for quarterbacks that are unproven. Mike Glennon might exceed that. I don't think so. But Mike Glennon, of course, is going to sign a deal in which he's going to get some $19 million guaranteed from the Chicago Bears. But at least he is kind of thought of as a highly touted young quarterback stuck in a bad position behind Jameis Winston. Brock Osweiler wasn't stuck behind anybody this year. Brock Osweiler was given his own franchise and the opportunity to do whatever he could with it. Brock Osweiler wet the bed. He just trickled down his leg. It's all warm and gushy inside of his slipper. Brock Osweiler was terrible. And now, according to multiple reports, as you just pointed out, you got one from Shefty. I just got a different one confirming that, yes, Brock Osweiler is going to the Cleveland Browns. This is how they solve their 25-year quarterback dilemma?
Apparently.
They have not had a quarterback, honest to God, that they can say is a top echelon quarterback in the league since Bernie Kosar. And what year was it that Bill Belichick cut Bernie Kosar?
1993.
Help me do my math. This is 2017. How many years ago was that then? 24 on the calendar. 25 seasons ago. Since they have had a decent quarterback, and they're going to solve their recent Brandon Whedon, Johnny Manziel, Robert Griffin, Josh McCown, help me out here. Give me some other names.
Do I have to?
Yes.
My head might actually explode this time.
What's that?
My head might actually explode this time if
I
do that.
And the reason I'm keeping it to the recent ones is because we can't blame, you know, Ty Detmer, Tim Couch, and all the other stuff from all the others on the current ownership / front office. So just with these guys, I mean, did we go back to Jason Campbell? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, Jason Campbell's in recent-er years.
Yeah, like I said, Whedon and Brady Quinn and
DeLome.
Manziel, Jake DeLome.
Garcia.
Jeff.
Dilfer. You're just
back.
Making me day. See, now I'm doing it. Now my head hurts even more.
Yeah. And they're going to add the name Osweiler to the bottom of that jersey.
Yes, they are.
That infamous jersey. Oh, my goodness.
Now,
if you'll
pardon me, I'm going to bang my head on this top a little bit more.
David Guetta, where are you? Bang your head against the wall. Sorry, little music reference there. How about that? An absolutely stunning development. Breaking news. The Browns are signing Brock Osweiler. They're not signing, assigning him, trading for him.
Houston's so desperate to do it. The Browns are even picking up a draft pick, according to Schefter, in this. A second rounder next year.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Nothing's mentioning so far, at least that I'm seeing, of what the Browns are having to give up.
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Yet another bad side, isn't it?
Yeah, this is an amazing development. How about that? So according to multiple reports, the Browns have agreed to a $32.5 million contract with Kenny Britt, of all people. And now they are trading for Brock Osweiler to throw him the football.
And that's on top of the Joel Bitonio extension they also gave. And they have, yes, and then they haven't signed Pryor or gotten rid of him or whatever yet.
Oh, my goodness. All right, listen, we got to talk high school basketball here. Are we going to take a quick time out and then get Bill Clark?
Yes, let's do that. My head might feel better.
Yeah, we got to figure this out. We got to talk a little high school basketball. Then we'll come back and talk more about this after the top of the hour right here on The Ticket. And we are still trying to collect our pieces of our brain and skull fragments as they have exploded all over the place here in the studio because breaking NFL news, just 9 minutes from now, deals can start becoming official in free agency. The tampering period, of course, the last couple of days. The Browns have acquired Brock Osweiler and his $16 million guaranteed minimum salary from the Houston Texans in exchange for a fourth round draft pick. So in terms of what the Browns get, they get Osweiler
and a second rounder,
a second round pick and a sixth round pick next year. and they give up only a fourth round pick. From that vantage point, if you're just trading the fourth for a team's second and their sixth, that's probably pretty darn good.
Yeah.
I'll make that trade.
Oh yeah.
But you gotta take Osweiler to ruin your offense in the process.
Oh my God.
Unbelievable. We've got a lot to figure out there. We'll try to dissect that and make some sense of that as we go. But for now, let's say good afternoon to our friend Bill Clark for just a few good minutes on high school basketball. Bill, it's a crazy day. Championship week going on in the NCAAs. NFL free agency period about to begin. Some crazy deals going on. And my goodness gracious, now we got to focus ourselves back on high school basketball. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Bob. How are you?
Oh, crazy, Bill. I mean, literally crazy. We're just trying to figure it out. Let's talk about some of the tournament matchup. District semi games from yesterday. Wauseon in Division II. We're looking at Division II here real quick. Wauseon beat Napoleon in overtime. And Woodward beat Central Catholic 59-58. I know you're, of course, very tight with the Central Catholic program calling all of their action. Just a brief recap of what happened there.
Well, as far as I know, it was one of those deals where Central had a lead late in the game, and they couldn't hold on to it. And as you mentioned, they ended up losing the game 59-58. And ironically, I believe it's the ninth game this year that Central has lost by 4 points or less.
Wow.
And I think we talked about that maybe in one of our other conversations about, you know, it's a young team. There were some seniors on the team, but it was, T.J. Hunt putting his system in, et cetera. And, you know, you have to learn how to win. And that's what happens sometimes in those late games or late times of the games.
Right.
If you're not used to winning, you just don't know how to push yourself over that hump. But, a tough loss, but great for Woodward. I was talking to Steve Junga after the game last night, and, he was thinking the last time Woodward got to a district semifinal was back in 1972. So wow. It's been a while for the Polar Bears. So good for them.
Yeah,
you know, it's nice to get. It's tough on the Irish, but good for the Polar Bears. And Wauseon, I tell you, they no surprise taking care of Maumee, and then last night they took care of Napoleon. But what a great ball game! Two overtimes, and everybody was throwing it from the ocean. It was going in from everywhere, and you know, Wauseon is the number one seed. It should be interesting against Woodward because Wauseon has a very attack kind of. Offense, and I also think the fact that, as we mentioned, this is the first time Woodward's been in the district since 1972, you know, they're going to go have fun. Nobody expected them to be there, so they're playing with house money at this point. So I think that would be a fun game on Saturday.
No question about it. It should be, and there's going to be an awful lot of fun at Savage tonight, and let's get into that now. The marquee matchups are in Division I doubleheader that will be here on 106.5, the Ticket, starting at 6 o'clock tonight from Savage. And, of course, the marquee everybody has been looking at and waiting for is St. John's and St. Francis, the top two seeds in the Toledo district. Then, of course, Bowser and Whitmer, the 3 against the 4, so it's all chalk there. What do you see happening with St. John's and St. Francis?
Well, I'll tell you, for some people, I think from St. Francis and St. John's, they're kind of breathing a little easier because both of those teams had a chance to get bounced in the sectional final. Fremont Ross gave St. John's everything they could handle, but the tournament tested and a little more savvy, St. John's were able to pull that one out 48-40. And Southview pretty much had the lead against St. Francis throughout the game until maybe the final couple of minutes, and all of a sudden the Knights were able to regroup. Kenny Coleman Graham made a couple of big free throws coming down the stretch, and so they got into the district semifinal. This will be round three between these two teams. People forget the fact that St. Francis started the season off 9-0, and they almost went to 10-0 because they played St. John's that night, and St. Francis had a lead until about 2.5 minutes to go in the game. And that's when Blake Williams came off the bench for St. John's and hit 4 out of his 5 threes that night and basically blew the game open, and St. Francis ended up winning by 10. The second time they got together was on Valentine's Day, and it turned out to be the Valentine's Day Massacre because St. John's just drilled them. They were up, I think they were up 21 at the end of the first half, and I take that back. Vince Williams had 21 points in the first half. He ended the game with 30. And they beat St. Francis by 40. So St. Francis is a much better team than that. They're not 40 points worse than St. John's, but they just had a terrible night when St. John's was having a good night. So, yes, Savage should be rocking tonight. It should be fun in that first game because you got, obviously, the rivalry whenever those teams play. And Travis Lewis has made St. Francis relevant again. I mean, this is the first time St. Francis has gotten this far into the tournament in several years. They have been, you know, fighting to get back, and now they come to work today, and they got a chance to get to a district championship on Saturday night. The other contest, I think it's contrasting styles. I think we mentioned this before. You have Bowser, who likes to run and gun. I think Joe Guerrero said if they can't get a shot up in 15 seconds, they're playing too slow. And they'll shoot 25 to 30 threes a night. They crash the boards. Boxing out is a lost art. They just go to the rim. And sometimes they'll play volleyball at the rim, back and forth, until somebody can tip it in. So Whitmer's going to have to try to slow them down, try to control the pace of the game. And then when the shots do go up, Whitmer's going to have to really go to work on the boards, because if Bowser gets the long rebound on a three, or if Whitmer misses the three and Bowser gets the long rebound, they're going off to the races, and they're not stopping for anybody. So Whitmer, defensively, if they can get some guys set up to take some charges, it might slow them down. But the interesting thing, you've got Derek Rayford with Whitmer and L.J. Rayford with Bowser. They're cousins. So it'll be a little family matter tonight, too. So bragging rights in the Rayford family are going to come into play before this one's over. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun night of basketball tonight.
Yeah, no question about it. And we'll have that doubleheader again starting at 6 o'clock right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, Bill Clark, of course, will be on the call. Just briefly, because we don't have a ton of time, but in the a couple of the other matchups in the Toledo District, that's Central, number 2, Eastwood, number 6, Swanton. Any thoughts on that? And then number 1, Genoa, fourth-seeded Stritch in the NICAP there at Toledo. Or, I'm sorry,
I think
Catholic, yes.
The way they are broken down, I would think you have Genoa getting by Cardinal Stritch, but Cardinal Stritch has some good shooters on their ball club, and Jamie Cash Merrick, I'm sure, will have them ready to play. So that should be an interesting game, but you'd kind of lean, I guess you'd have to lean kind of toward Genoa. And as far as Eastwood and Swan, that's going to be a battle, because I think Swan is a really tough team. They've got some really good athletes, but Eastwood has been kind of running through everybody this year. So that could be a very good game. I don't see a blowout in either of those games. I think they're going to be very competitive and have an interesting district championship on Saturday.
Hey, real quick, if you could, Bill, because you do the girls' games, too, and you get a big one on Saturday afternoon, the regional finals, and I believe that's Notre Dame involved in that one. What can you tell us about that?
Well, Notre Dame's going back to the regional final for the fifth time in 6 years. Last year, Whitmer beat them in the district championship 44-41. Notre Dame got the revenge this past weekend. And then, really, in the regional semifinal this week, Notre Dame had a third-quarter 20-point lead, and the game ended up going to overtime. The team they played had a 25-5 run, Olmsted Falls. They went 25-5 at the end of the game to tie things at 51, and then Notre Dame outscored them 11-2 in the overtime. So Notre Dame's back. They've been there, and they're playing Mid Park. And Mid Park has a girl who set the school scoring record. They have another girl who set the school's rebounding record. So as I mentioned to you before, when people say, well, are these teams really good? Well, you don't get to the regional final unless you're a pretty good team. Notre Dame probably will be the taller of the team, and I think they're the more athletic of the two teams. So I would expect to spend some time in Columbus next week after Notre Dame can knock off Mid Park on Saturday.
All right. Hey, Bill Clark, it's going to be a great call tonight, a doubleheader, obviously, at Savage. It's going to be number 1, St. John, number 2, St. Francis. That is going to be the lead game at 6 o'clock. We'll look forward to your coverage there. It should be a great, great night of high school basketball. Bill Clark, thanks so much for the time.
My pleasure, Bob. Anytime.
You got it. Bowser and Whitmer, by the way, the night capital. We'll start with St. John's and St. Francis. All right, it's 4 o'clock, so we're going to get a quick time out here. We're going to come back. We're going to analyze a little bit more of the NFL moves that are being made. It's literally 4 o'clock now. That means teams can make signings and agreements official. So we're going to get you the details as we can find them on also not only free agent signings but trades, including Brock Osweiler, the poster child for bad contracts given to unproven quarterbacks in Houston last year. He is now on his way to Cleveland to take over the huddle for the Cleveland Browns. My goodness gracious, the more things change, the more they stay the same. More coming up right here on The Ticket.
Everybody's safe. You know, we have a few people banged up a little bit, a few cuts, a few bruises. But other than that, everybody's healthy, and it could have been much worse. The way the flight attendants, the pilots, everybody, the student athletes, the students, the staff conduct themselves, it was incredible. We were off that plane, going down those chutes, going up on the wings, getting out of there. That, in a minute, it seemed like everybody got off that plane. Everybody was really disciplined and a lot of poise.
Longer inside, backs it out to Wolf. With a 3-1 answer. Walton again. When they need a big bucket, he has delivered today.
And the performance of his that we really can't put on screen is the leadership role that he's taken, especially going through everything that this team has gone through. John Beilein certainly doing his job, but Derek Walton, as you see.
The flip from Abdul-Rahman and maybe the exclamation point for Michigan and the dunk from Zach Ervin. But I would imagine there's not been a 24 hours like this in the career of John Beilein, whose leadership was tested in a lot of ways. Not only his leadership of this team, but of the entire university and everybody around it over the last 24 hours.
I believe so much in the team chemistry and having a team that is just so so connected that they can do anything. They love each other, and that was another time that we really got to love each other. Not only that, but the whole day of getting in here and everything, they just came out. They needed this. They needed to just go out and play basketball.
I'm not taking anything away from Rutgers, but we were sharp, focused. I mean, 19 offensive rebounds, a joke. You know, we just never manned up to the level we needed to.
We all kind of need to look in the mirror and ask ourselves if we actually care about this program, this university, the fans, and each other, me included. I feel like at times we don't play with the heart and passion like we should.
What were the breakdowns for you?
All over the place. They destroyed us. It wasn't just one place or one area. They absolutely destroyed us. We made some shots. We got up one, and then they just killed us after that. So I'm not putting anything into that. So what? We played 4 good minutes in the game. That's great.
We just didn't move the ball. They were very good ones, which the majority of the league is, but they're very good. Difficult for us offensively because we didn't really defensive rebound the ball, nor did we get a lot of stops.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right. We roll along now at 4:12 right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Trying to bring you the latest on everything that's happening at Championship Week. You heard a little bit there in the montage, Michigan beating Illinois. You heard a little bit of Ohio State's Thad Matta, Jaquan Lyle losing, the Buckeyes losing to Rutgers. Then a little bit on the Pistons, and then you got a little bit of Adam Schefter on Tyrod Taylor, but that's not the part we want to hear from Adam Schefter about. What we want to hear right now is the specific details on why it is that the Cleveland Browns, the most laughably pathetic franchise, honest to God, embarrassing franchise, in my opinion, in North American sports for the last 20 years. All team sports. Trading for Brock Osweiler to be their quarterback, according to multiple reports. However, Brock Osweiler may not be long for Cleveland. This might not be a deal that sends Osweiler from the Texans. It's clear why the Texans traded him, of course. They're trying to clear the room for, and clear the path or the road, if you will, for Tony Romo. Tony Romo could be traded from the Cowboys to the Texans, possibly within the hour. We know that Tony Romo is going to be on the move. They're either going to release him or trade him. They're going to see if they can get something. Knowing there are suitors from Denver to Kansas City to Houston, obviously Jerry Jones is going to hold on to him as long as possible to see if he can make a deal. And it looks like maybe Houston is going to be the team that makes that deal, since they have indeed let Brock Osweiler out of town, or sent him out of town. What I'm about to play for you is Adam Schefter on live television reading from his smartphone as he literally just gets word of the deal that sends Brock Osweiler to the Browns, along with a second-round pick next year and a sixth-round pick as well to the Browns in exchange for just a fourth-round pick. Now, the problem with that is...
The sixth and the fourth, by the way, are for this year. I found that information.
I'm sorry, say again?
The sixth round pick and the fourth in that trade, I found info that...
that's
those
2017.
Are
for, yes, right, correct. The second round pick is for next year.
Yes.
All right. The other thing, of course, is the Browns have to take Brock Osweiler and his $16 million guaranteed salary and his monstrous contract that he signed literally just 1 year ago in free agency. So this is what Adam Schefter got literally... just about 20, 25 minutes ago, as Jim told us, and this is the moment that he got the message on his cell phone. And we're not hearing it. Hold on, I got it one more time. 3, 2, 1.
Houston saves $60 million in cash, $10 million against its cap. The Texans will get the Browns' fourth-round pick this year in exchange for their sixth-round pick. So Cleveland gets Osweiler's contract. They're trading for the contract.
Not the player.
Not the player, the contract.
I don't understand.
Whoa.
Well, they trade for the player.
No, they can't do that. I know what he means, though.
They're trading for the player.
What does that mean?
This is an NBA trade.
Correct.
He's not going to stay there.
They're trading for the player and his contract.
And they'll figure it out.
A 2018 second-round draft pick and a 2017 sixth-round pick. So Cleveland gets Osweiler, a second
and a sixth.
A sixth, and Houston gets Cleveland's fourth-round pick and saves $10 million in salary cap space and $16 million in cash. Brock Osweiler is now gone. Now, the deck is clear for Tony Romo.
That's what this trade is all about.
Okay? Yeah.
Rick Smith is
the deck is cleared. I've tried to tell y'all.
The deck is cleared.
Okay, now then the talking heads go on to try to analyze all of this. Let's try to do some of that ourselves. Kush, ESPN's Pat McManaman, who covers the Browns for ESPN,
right,
says that the team is not acquiring Osweiler to be their quarterback, which is good news for a lot of people. Who did not want to see the name Osweiler at the bottom of that jersey. They're not acquiring him to be their quarterback. Pat McManaman says the move clears millions in salary cap space for Houston to intensify their efforts to acquire Romo, which we talked about.
Right.
But for the Browns, Cleveland is not committed to keeping Osweiler and is likely to trade him, sources said, according to McManaman. If that happens, the deal would turn into a basketball-like trade in which the NBA teams routinely trade contracts to get them off the books. That move rarely happens in the NFL. It's hard. I'm reading right from ESPN. It's hard to remember another time in the salary cap era when a team traded a contract just to get it off its books, but Houston was so eager to rid itself of Osweiler and move on to the next quarterbacking chapter that it is giving Cleveland extra picks to take him and his contracts. The Browns headed into this free agent signing period with more than $100 million worth of salary cap space and would struggle to spend it all. Now they can devote some of it to Osweiler's contract and acquiring extra draft picks from Houston. So the question now becomes, who is going to be willing to take Brock Osweiler and his big contract from Cleveland in a trade to give them more picks and more opportunities so that they would have, of course, product to spend that $100 million in cap space on? And we're back to the same question we were at before. You know, what teams are desperate for quarterback help? Chicago? Yes. But they are going to acquire Mike Glennon in a free agent signing from Tampa Bay. We got that, a few hours ago.
Right.
The Buffalo Bills, yes, but they have apparently reached an agreement and they're going to hold on to Tyrod Taylor as their starter. San Francisco, yes, but San Francisco could be in the process of acquiring Kirk Cousins from the Redskins via trade because Cousins, even though he's been franchise tagged, has gone directly to the owner, Dan Snyder, and said, I would like a trade. He does not want to play another season under the franchise tag where he just has the 1 year at the average of the top five quarterback salaries. It's a great contract for a year at that position, but he's looking for long-term security, obviously, in a multi-year deal with many, many, many more millions guaranteed than he is in this contract. So there is a trade request from Cousins with the Redskins to go to, presumably, Kyle Shanahan, with whom he is very familiar, who has taken over in San Francisco. That would mean the Redskins are now shopping for a quarterback, And I think we are kind of close to running out of teams looking for QBs, with the exception of Denver. They're a non-factor because they're the ones who were so happy to dump Osweiler on Houston.
Right.
So I'm looking for possible trade partners as far as Brock Osweiler, and I don't see anybody in a quarterback-starved league that would be willing to trade anything for Brock Osweiler to be their starter. Now, could he be a backup in somebody's system? Of course he could. That's what he did, you know, relatively well behind Peyton Manning in Denver. But he's making starter money now. He's got franchise money now, and somebody is going to have to renegotiate a contract in order to take him on if they want him to be their backup.
Yeah, and the interesting
thing, what a mess.
Yeah, it is. And because this is kind of NBA style, in theory, what the Browns may be, based on what we're now reading, are trying to do here, which is, yeah, you take the big contract. Essentially, think of Andrew Bogut before the leg break, 57 seconds into his tenure. What happened? You know, Dallas traded him to Philly. Philly bought him out. He's a free agent. That's kind of, in theory, what they're trying to do here, but I'm not sure how that works in the NFL, because as part in the clip with Adam Schefter you played, and just in general, these things don't happen like this exactly in the NFL the way they do in the NBA, but that seems to be, you know, part of the principle here. Our good buddy Scott Petrak tweeting out maybe 30 minutes ago or so, Browns wanted the second round pick from the Texans and were willing to take on Osweiler's contract for 1 year.
And we know why, or at least we can suspect why they wanted that second round pick
right.
So badly.
And they're the one team really in the NFL that if their plan, whatever it is they're trying to do with all this and this specific thing, blows up in their faces, i.e. they're stuck paying Osweiler, that they're one of the few teams in the entire league that could actually afford to do it and still probably do most of the other things that are on their to-do list because they have so much space.
It's not about the other things that are on their to-do list. It's the number one thing that's on their to-do list, and that is the acquisition of a quarterback to play for them, not just to be, you know, to help them acquire that second-round pick. Hold on now. According to the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the Browns are fully expected to make a big pitch to the Patriots to pry Jimmy Garoppolo away from them. That second-round pick they acquired in this Osweiler deal would be a part of that bargain.
Yeah, that
makes
sense.
Would be a part of that. You know, that's another asset. That's
sure.
Another chip.
They
don't necessarily want to trade either one of their top two first-round picks this year,
right,
which are number 1 and number 12. But if they offer a first-round pick a year from now, along with maybe a second-round pick next year as well to the Patriots, it might take a 1 and a 2 to get Garoppolo.
Yeah.
Especially since the Patriots made a point of saying they're not trading him, which, of course, is simply code for it's going to cost you a hell of a lot in order to get us to trade him.
Right.
And the Browns may have just acquired extra picks without losing their picks, their current, you know, top two picks, in order to make that happen. So what this sounds like, and again, I'm going to quote the Plain Dealer out there in Cleveland, Jim. This, we were kind of making fun of Paul DePodesta just a short while ago. It sounds like Moneyball. It sounds a little bit like Moneyball. For the Browns, and I'll quote again from the article, it's all about acquiring that second-round pick, not about acquiring Osweiler. For the Texans, it's about unloading that $16 million guaranteed contract for 2017. His $18 million and $17 million base salaries in 2018 and 19 are not guaranteed. So the only thing the Browns would be locked into is, if they keep him, is that $16 million guarantee this year. That move does not preclude them from trying to trade for Jimmy Garoppolo, which they're still expected to do. And again, I'm adding my piece in there and saying that's why this second round pick was so valuable to them. Essentially, it's a pick for cash trade that benefits both teams. It's also the essence of Moneyball. It doesn't necessarily mean the Browns will release Robert Griffin III either, by the way. He's due a $750,000 bonus on Saturday, and the Browns might pay him that bonus and continue to work on their quarterback position around him. And that might include, of course, the drafting a quarterback, or if they can pry Garoppolo loose from New England. So it's in other words, it looks like the Browns are playing the proverbial chess game as opposed to checkers. Most of us reacted with a checkers mentality. What? Brock Osweiler? He's awful. Did you see him in Houston? He was terrible. That's our checkers mentality. But now let's take that away and let's start looking at this from the chess perspective of a chess master. Maybe this is with the intention of moving him on to another team, but certainly even if they can't move him on, acquiring him, eating the $16 million guaranteed contract this year because they're $100 million of cap space that they have to play with, while using the picks they acquired with him potentially to get the quarterback they really want.
Yeah, and that's part of where I think the extra cap money comes in. Like I said, if the worst case scenario, if what you're kind of outlining is kind of where they're going on this,
yeah,
then the fact that they have the $100 million, well, $100 million minus 16, so you're at 84. That's still $84 million you could spend on other guys, even if the worst happens and you're still stuck with that hit on against their cap. You right. know what I mean? So they'd still have, okay, they took one giant crate off the whole big, you know, boat. There's tons more still there, is what I'm trying to say. So,
right.
So in the worst, and they're one of the only teams that could do something like that, because there is that risk. You know, they have to find somebody who'd be willing to kind of do what the Browns just did with some draft picks and maybe an asset like that involved. But then eventually you're going to get to a team that's going to get.
But
stuck
who's there?
With him.
I mean, who's out there to do that with? I mean,
that's,
you know,
that's
I,
the
I,
point. That's why this is really tricky. And yeah, it might suck if they're stuck with him and that's 16 extra million they can't spend. It's, but it, I think we have to say it's a possibility that could happen.
Yes, absolutely.
Even if he never even dons a uniform in training camp, they'd still be stuck contract wise.
Yeah, and you know, the chances are, well, in my estimation, if they're unable to get Garoppolo.
Okay.
And if they choose not to invest one of their top two picks in a quarterback, you know, one of the top three guys that are out there, they may very well come back next year with a Robert Griffin, Brock Osweiler 1-2 or 2-1. Either way, knowing that they're not guaranteed and locked into either guy next season, the 2018 season. So if they got to ride one more year, I should say, with a stopgap until what's available next year. You know, Sam Darnold, and I don't want to sit here and say they're going to be terrible and go 1-15 so that they can get the number one pick and tank for Sam Darnold the way a lot of people feel like there are going to be some really, really bad teams that consider doing next year. But maybe they're going to push off the quarterback of the future search if they don't get a Garoppolo. Maybe push that off a year, and when the quarterback talent might be just a little bit deeper, and just go ahead and go to battle this year with a Griffin or an Osweiler at 1-2. Hell, Griffin's never stayed healthy, as we know. Osweiler's going to have to play and earn some of that.
Yeah, in that scenario, he would. Yep.
Yeah, it's just it would just be a question of whether or not the fans would accept that this is a temporary, you know, moment in time. This isn't the hey, he's our franchise guy of the future, even though he's being paid like the franchise guy. You know, that's what Houston paid him to be as a franchise yep. quarterback. He'll be paid that way for 1 year, but nothing after this coming year is guaranteed for him. So then the Browns could get out clean and go back, go next year and get the guy that they really want.
Well, I really hope that's kind of the plan, because if it's to actually play him as the quarterback, then I revert back to my banging head against the counter yeah. here in the studio.
unless it's just to play the quarterback for the season, to fill in, you know,
oh, joy,
for
be
a short
fun.
Period of time. You know, it's like the DeLome thing, and it's like the
yeah.
Campbell thing. You know, it's like they were never brought to that town to play
long-term. But we're still on those bridges. Don't they have to stop this? Because if that's this part of the scenario, and I know maybe it's because they're not sold on some of the draft picks that
some
are going to be available,
in this year's class, right.
or they can't get Garoppolo, but when does it end? I mean, DeLome was 10 years ago now, or 7. Derek Anderson was 10. I mean,
well,
when are
I
these bridges
the
going to end?
The easy answer to that is it ends next year, because this is the problem. I mean, if they can make it end this year, they will. If they're able to pry a Garoppolo loose, and you just hope by it. And by the way, I have said in this program, I am not, you know, sold on Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm not a believer that he's the second coming of Tom Brady, because he played behind Tom Brady and Bill Belichick drafted him and we saw him for a game and a half. I'm not sold. I mean, there are a lot of scouts who are very high on him. A lot of people think he's got all of the intangibles, et cetera, physical skills and so on, but I'm not sold. But if they are and they're able to pry him loose, then it ends now. And you'll see why, of course, this, they were willing to pay Osweiler for 1 year, unless they were able to move him somehow, some way, in some crazy form.
Yeah.
Because it led to, a pick, the second round pick they're getting from the Texans as part of a compensation package to get Garoppolo. And I would be fine with that.
Well,
but if they can't pry him loose.
Yeah.
And if they're not sold on Watson, if they're not sold on Kaiser, and if they're not sold on Trubisky, and there are reasons to be sold on all three.
True.
And there are reasons to not be sold on all three.
Also true.
Then you have to believe that it ends next year, that they've just got one more year to fill the gap here. Cody Kessler can take some snaps, Osweiler can take some snaps, et cetera, and then get yourself in a position, especially, again, with more assets. Here's the thing, Jim. If they're unable to get Garoppolo, then they have just added a second and a fourth. I'm sorry. They've added a second and a sixth.
Six for this year, second for next year.
Yep.
Right. To what they already have, which is a multitude of picks over the next 2 years, then perhaps, they work whatever deal they have to work to make sure they do get the number one pick next year, even if their record doesn't give it to them, so that they can go ahead and take Sam Darnold and he's the guy, of course, everybody is really looking for.
Right.
Well, some of this started with an Adam Schefter tweet, so I'll throw his latest one out there from a couple minutes ago.
On
this type of front, hopefully that this is part of that good news, that this is just a pit stop almost contract-wise. Teams already, according to sources, have reached out to the Browns to inquire on Osweiler's availability.
What teams?
Well, he obviously doesn't say, but I hope that that's actually true. If that's a good sign for the Browns.
Well, yeah, of course it's a good sign. Because
we're
sitting
here
already
debating who's even going to ask for him, you know?
Real quick, let's go through. I'm just going to run through the divisions. New England would have no interest.
Right.
Miami, behind Tannehill. I don't know. They might be interested in a backup, but not in a not for that kind of salary.
Right.
Forget about it. Buffalo, again, they've pretty much agreed with Tyrod Taylor, had they not, to bring him back and continue to pay him starters money.
They have.
The Jets. Oh, there it is. That might be it. That might be a team that would be interested. The Jets might be interested in a Brock Osweiler, because remember, they had just all kinds of problems last year with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
They have no earthly idea who's going to play the position. They need a starter. Maybe his contract is something they can live with if they feel better about him than they do what Christian Hackenberg is on that roster, and Bryce Petty.
Right.
They don't feel either one of those guys is the guy, and maybe Osweiler, even with just 1 year's experience, is better than what they have. That might be a team that could have placed that call. Steelers wouldn't have placed that call. Baltimore wouldn't have placed that call. Cincinnati wouldn't have contacted them. The Tennessee Titans wouldn't have contacted them. The Indianapolis Colts wouldn't have contacted them. The Jacksonville Jaguars might have. That's a team. All right. We're working our way through this. Blake Bortles is not long for that city, probably, or this league. Is that a possibility? Did somebody call the Browns from Jacksonville and say, all right, we understand you got Brock Osweiler, now let's talk. This is something that would be an improvement for us. The Chiefs have Alex Smith. They wouldn't be interested. The Raiders would not. The Broncos are looking for a quarterback, but this
not
is, of course,
one.
The guy they jettisoned, so not them. Phillip Rivers is still in San Diego. That's the AFC.
You mean L.A.?
Dallas, obviously, no. The New York Giants, no. The Redskins, it depends. Now let's talk about that. There's a third team that could be if Cousins, who has requested a trade from Daniel Snyder, probably so he can go out and play for Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco. If he does agree to that, the Redskins need a quarterback. They might be somebody who inquired, and if they do get a deal with the Browns for Osweiler, then they might be inclined to make the deal with the Niners for Kirk Cousins. So that's a team you could say yes to. Philadelphia has Carson Wentz, no. Packers, no. Lions, no. Vikings, no. Chicago Bears, again, we know they're going to ink a deal with Mike Glennon. I'm not sure if that one has been written yet, but it's supposed to be. Falcons, no. Buccaneers, no. New Orleans Saints, no. Carolina Panthers, no. Seattle Seahawks, no. Cardinals are probably looking beyond Carson Palmer, who's did not have a good year last year. After having a tremendous year, an MVP caliber year in 2015.
Though it is my understanding, I think he's going to be back.
Yeah, and so
it's
probably not
going to
want to pay starters
year.
Money for him yet.
To sit on the bench more or less for a year. No,
right.
They wouldn't
the
want to do that.
The Rams have Goff, obviously, and then there's the Niners. And maybe
I don't
that's
know if the Goff, you know, obviously, they barely played him, but I don't think the Rams are going to want to dip their toes in something like that again.
No, heck no. No. But then we get to the Niners, who, again, if they get the Cousins trade made,
then they're out.
Then they're settled. But if they don't make that trade, then they might have been one of the ones to call the Browns. I think I just came up with four potential teams that might have called. Adam Schefter said teams have inquired with the Browns about the availability of Osweiler. And I think I've got it narrowed down to the Jets, the Jaguars, the Redskins. Redskins potentially and the Niners. And really it's only one of those teams. If Cousins goes to the Niners, then it's the Redskins. If Cousins stays long term with the Niners or the Redskins, then it's the Niners.
So it's really
four teams that I could think that would have called the Browns according to what Adam said.
And because of that Cousins dynamic, it really is like three and a half. Really, because it's not obvious. It's going to be one or the other.
It's one or the other.
That's not much.
I mean, again, you know, the Bears would be in play here if we didn't already know about the Glennon thing.
Right.
A number of these things, even the Bills, you know, might be in play if it wasn't for the Tyrod Taylor. So that's kind of where we are as we try to speculate all of this stuff and see where it's going to be. But if you just turn on the radio and you don't know what in the living hell we're talking about, Adam Schefter, among many other sources, I think he was first reporting that Brock Osweiler has been traded from the Texans to the Browns, along with a second-round pick next year and a sixth-round pick this year for the Browns' fourth-round pick this year. The Browns have reportedly acquired Osweiler only with the intention of trading him and or just dealing with his contract for 1 year in order to get that second-round pick, which they could use as a bargaining chip as they try to make a deal for someone like Jimmy Garoppolo. So that's where we are right now. And, oh, by the way, the Browns also agreed to pay Kenny Britt $32.5 million earlier today. Kenny Britt is a third-tier receiver. He's not even a second-tier receiver. It is too much money in my estimation, especially when Terrell Pryor was offered just about that same amount. And Pryor probably has more upside, given his youth, because Britt's been in the league for, 8 years, 9 years now? Pryor just completed his first real full season as a wide receiver, and it's only, his fourth or fifth in the league anyway. So anyway, that's where we are. Not much else to report at this particular point in time. We'll double-check the latest free agent signs and trade maneuvers during this timeout for SportsCenter. Then we'll come back and try to update you on what we find, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Championship Week as the Big Ten tournament continues. University of Michigan, are they in the big dance? They did get a big win today over Illinois. They've got Purdue next in the Big Ten tournament. And we're going to talk to who are we talking to coming up here? Oh, we're going to talk to Anthony Broom from MazeandBrew.com.
Yep.
That's who it is, about the Wolverines' chances of getting in the dance. So that's coming up as well as we enter the final half hour of the Extravaganza.
France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Okay, I might not quite understand exactly where we are right now. I know we're going to be talking with Anthony Broom from MazeandBrew.com. Chris, you got him on the line yet?
No, we were going to go to that here in a couple
okay,
minutes.
So we don't have Anthony yet, and that's fine because we do want to talk
big
about Michigan basketball.
Big spot load today. Sorry, everybody.
What's that?
Big spot load today. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, that's fine. We're going to talk to Anthony Broom about Michigan basketball. They got a big win over Illinois in the first round of the tournament today. A very emotional win, and apparently John Beilein was rather emotional, saying we feel very blessed today. We'll talk about why that was so emotional. Obviously, they had a little bit of a scare with the airplane runway incident. Today, they, of course, don't have their jerseys. They didn't play in their practice jerseys. A very, very strange situation for Michigan basketball as they deal with the Big Ten tournament and try to get into the NCAA. So we'll talk to Anthony Broom about that coming up in a moment. But for now, we're also focused on the National Football League and the free agency signing period, which is, of course, underway, trying to figure out, make some sense of all of these signings and all of these trades. It looks like the Cowboys are going to trade Tony Romo very probably, I would say, to the Texans, who moved Brock Osweiler to the Browns to make room for that literally just less than an hour ago. Mike Glennon's going to go to the Bears and play quarterback for them. Redskins quarterback Kirk Cousins is asking for a trade. He probably wants to go to San Francisco. Former Bears wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey is headed to the Eagles. The Bears are cutting Jay Cutler, by the way, to make room for Mike Glennon. Let's see, Kenny Britt has been signed to play wide receiver by the Browns. It's another average receiver to join a very average receiving core. You know, they drafted like 14 receivers, it seemed, last year, and none of them are game breakers. None of them are game breakers. The only game breaker they really had was Terrell Pryor, and he's the guy who's a free agent that they won't give a franchise tag to or sign to a long-term deal, at least as of now. So they got a bunch of average receivers. They got no quarterback really to speak of. They've brought Osweiler there for at least the time being, and where it goes from there, we just don't know.
And I would say the biggest Lions news of the day, they made a nice signing on an offensive tackle in principle. They just can be official now, but the biggest news I'd say for the day is due to the injuries and the issues he's had over the last couple of years, the Lions have released DeAndre Levy.
Okay.
Yes, they did. That would be the biggest Lions news, I would say, right
that
now.
That is big. I mean, it's not as big as it would be, but obviously right. They wouldn't have released him had he not been injured all the time.
About 1.75 of his deal was going to be guaranteed as of Saturday. That's another factor in some of these things going happening right early, some of these contract-type things and the guaranteed part, because we're in the NFL, we're talking here. A lot of those go effective like Saturday or something, because right. We're now in the league calendar.
Let's get to a couple of phone calls and see what's going on. Eric in Toledo wants to comment on this Brock Osweiler deal between the Texans and the Browns. Hey, Eric, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. It was a really short-notice call. I'm sitting at work, and I have my phone right by my desk. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, Bleacher Report, little plug there for them. I love Bleacher Report. Starts going off. I'm just like, all right, what's going on? Because I only get updates from my teams, and Cleveland Browns are one of my teams.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, I see Browns have traded for Brock Osweiler. So I'm like, okay, what's this about? I go on my computer. I stop whatever I'm doing. I go on my computer, and I start looking up on Bleacher Report because they have it first for some reason. They always have it first.
Okay.
I'm looking it up, and it says Browns get Brock Osweiler, sixth-round pick this year, and the second-round pick in 2018. What do the Texans get? Cap space and the 2014 fourth-round pick. The Browns are making off like bandits. Whether they cut Brock Osweiler or not, they're making off like bandits, picking up another second-round pick in 2018 draft, because they already got the Eagles from last year when they traded away that pick, and Eagles got Carson Wentz, and they have their original pick. They had this one. That's three second-round picks, and depending how bad they might do this upcoming season, I'm never all that optimistic. I go in, fingers crossed, but depending how they do, they could honestly end up with four or maybe five picks in the first two rounds.
Which makes them, that's next year, which makes them in prime position to do what?
To either one, go after one of those, one of these big free trade quarterbacks who may be free agents next year.
No, I'm talking about all of the picks. I'm talking about all of the picks that they have. To me, if they had five picks in the first two rounds next year, even if they don't stink enough to have the top overall pick, they could very well put together a package and buy it and grab themselves USC's Sam Darnold, which everybody is waiting for to come out next year.
Yeah, and that's certainly an option. It the Browns are putting themselves in positions for the longest time. They've had failed options. They've had failed targets.
And they still might. Don't get too excited. Might. Listen, don't get too excited, Eric, because this is what the Browns are known for. They collected a whole bunch of picks last year, too, and they had 14 picks, and not one of them was an impact player. None of them. So it's not just, hey, let's wheel and deal and collect a bunch of high picks or overall picks. You got to make the right picks when your time and when you're on the clock. And they have not proven an ability to do that yet. Secondly, and I got to run here because I got to get some other people on before we have to move. But the second part of that is, when you say they made out like bandits, they kind of did, but I don't blame the Texans, and I don't think they got fleeced either, because they had to move Osweiler's deal. They had to get his $16 million guaranteed 2017 money off of their books and $10 million in cap space cleared so that they can make this deal that is expected for Tony Romo. So for them, it works as well as for the Browns. This might be one of those rare win-win situations for both franchises. Brian in Toledo is next. Hey, Brian, go ahead. Hello, Brian. Can you hear me?
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Good, Brian. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I didn't want to get into the Browns too much. I tried to get on with you last Friday when you were doing the whole Kaepernick mixing type deal.
Sure,
so I don't know if we could touch base on that. I agree with you 100% on you saying that Kaepernick sold out, you know, by not taking a knee anymore during the national anthem.
Get a contract someplace, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm on board with you on that 100%. You know, and I've heard people, you know, say this and that about what he's doing in his stance, and it may be right. I get that part. But, you know, you have a national stage. I also get that part. But to me, you're a National Football League quarterback. You're going to have a press conference every single Sunday. Stay in the locker room for the national anthem.
There you
and
go.
Then explain, that,
and that's
then
not
explain.
That's not a bad. And then make your statements when it's time to speak, and not during the anthem. I don't mean to rush along, but I'm pinched for time here a little bit, Brian. What do you want to say about Mixon, real quick? Okay, looks like we lost Brian. Brian, my apologies for that. Like I said, I'm a little pinched for time here, so I got to move some people along. Jim and Maumee, real quick. Jim, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, buddy, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. You do a wonderful job.
Thank you.
I know this is a little off the topic, but do you think I saw on the Big Ten Network last night that Gene Smith said absolutely unequivocally that Thad Matta was going to be coach again next year? Do you think he's been taking some heat? And do you think why he sort of taking heat because Matta kind of did it in the opposite order of most coaches? They come in, take a program, they build it up to the national title game, but he did it kind of in the reverse. He went to the national title game like the second or third year, and he's kind of gone downhill since. That's all I got to say. I just want to hear what you have to say.
I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. And, yes, I think there is some heat. I think there's some heat on Thad Matta from a lot of fans and boosters and alumni. And because of that, there is a lot of heat on Gene Smith. I think you're 100% correct. But I also think Smith was being legit and honest. I don't think that was the death knell that oftentimes public shows of support are for coaches. I think he really means Thad Matta's coming back. He wants recruits to know that the program is on solid ground and that there's not going to be a coaching change. And that's why I think he made that public statement, to let Thad Matta go out and try to get the guys he needs to rebuild this thing to where it has to be. There's nothing, no better way to lose blue chip recruits than to let them think that there's instability at the top. Guys want to come and play for who they're recruited by. They don't want to have to come in and then have that change. So I think that public show by Gene Smith was very necessary. But, yeah, there is heat. It is legit. They're going to try to keep this thing together, though, at least for one more year. And then we'll see exactly what he's able to do to turn this around in 2017-18. All right, let me get a quick timeout. Then we'll come back and talk about the other side of the Big Ten basketball world that we cover, and that would be the Michigan side as they beat the...
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, it is 4:53, final segment of the extravaganza this afternoon right here on The Ticket. We want to devote this time to college basketball because there's a big win in the first round of the NCAA tournament by the University of Michigan Wolverines, wearing their practice gear after some very dicey times with the airline over the last couple of days, runway scares, and now uniforms not making the trip to the Big Ten tournament in D.C. Michigan takes apart Illinois in their practice gear, a 20-point victory. Joining us now is Anthony Broom from MazeandBrew.com. Anthony, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Boy, kind of an emotional win. John Beilein was very emotional after the game. He was talked about how very blessed they were just to be where they are right now. Can you kind of talk a little bit about how that how that program feels right now?
Yeah, I think it was definitely an emotional day. I think whether or not they won this game, and thank goodness they did, but I think everyone's just glad that everyone's safe, everyone's okay, because it could have been a lot worse. The circumstances around the wind yesterday, it could have been a lot uglier than it was. And thank God that not only they were able to make it there, that everyone's just okay, and all was good on that front. So definitely, I think early on they came out and were playing off adrenaline. They certainly fired it right out of the gate and kind of lost a little bit there, but then got it back and were able to run away in this game. I'm interested to see how all this affects them going into tomorrow. But for right now, I think everyone's just grateful that the game is over. They got there, and they're going to play some more basketball. And I think everyone just kind of took a step back and definitely provided some perspective for that program yesterday.
You know, you could see a team that goes through what they went through actually being so distracted and flustered and whatever you want to call it by everything that went down, that they lost this game. And you could give them some sort of an excuse and say, hey, it's understandable. But instead, they rose up. They pulled together. They did whatever they have to do to find the motivation to go out there and play their loosest, most comfortable, and arguably best game in the last couple of months.
Yeah, that was – I mean, mind you, Illinois isn't quite a juggernaut like they'll be going up against in Purdue. But
sure.
Really just put together a really – I mean, the defense was there. The offense was there. We thought maybe, okay, if anything's going to slow them down, maybe this plane situation is. But that really wasn't the case. I think we saw more of what we have been seeing. And, you know, I think after, you know, you don't want to say it was a brush with death or anything like that, but,
right.
You know, after something like that and all that they went through to get to D.C., how can you not come out and play loose? I mean, the game was the easiest thing that they've done in the last 24 hours. So I think you saw that. I think you're just seeing a loose team right now, a team that's playing really confident. And, God, they've taken so many punches this year and have just kind of come back from it. So at this point, I'm not sure there's anything that they're not ready for.
That's a really good place to be in when you face the number one seed in the Big Ten tournament coming up in Purdue. Jim Cushman's got a question for you, Anthony. Go ahead, Jim.
And on that front, they get Purdue, so it wouldn't be a bad loss. Obviously, all the better if they can win. All the various bracket guys and bracketologists and bubble watch guys that I've been reading, Anthony, think this team is basically a lock at this point. Is that kind of the assessment, or are we definitely, no matter what happens tomorrow, looking at Michigan in the Big Ten?
Yeah, I think they're in. At the very least, they're probably in as an 8 or 9 seed. If they go out and beat Purdue and maybe win another game or maybe even just win the Big Ten tournament, I think they could potentially play themselves up into that 6 or 7 range, which, being on that 8-9 line, you're looking at playing a 1 seed should you win your first game of the tournament. So to move up is definitely something they'd like to do and something they'd need. And, we saw them just beat Purdue a couple weeks ago, so it's certainly something they can do.
Absolutely right. 75-55, the final, as Michigan takes down Illinois, and they will have Purdue on Friday. And obviously, Selection Sunday cannot come soon enough, especially for Wolverine fans who want to make sure that their guys are indeed on one of those lines. Anthony Brew, MaizeandBrew.com. Anthony, thanks so much for adjusting your time schedule with us. We apologize for the short visit. A lot of crazy news in the NFL today, but we certainly appreciate the time, and we'll check in again soon.
No problem. Thanks again.
Thanks so much, Anthony. All right, there you go. That's all the time we've got. Really great conversations today with some very good callers. Hopefully we gave you all the information up to date as we have it on the player movement involving NFL free agents. And, of course, tomorrow we'll have a lot more on that front as well as where we are, an update on Championship Week. That'll be all part of tomorrow's Free for All Friday program. So until then, have yourself a great night tonight. Stay where you are because Drive Time is coming up next right here on the team.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.